Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to EB5 Investment Voice. This is a special episode. I know we've been gone for a week or so, but I'm actually here in New York City at Mona Shaw & Associates. I'm sitting across from Mona Shaw herself. You hear her laughing, our host here. I've got to meet a lot of the attorneys in person that I've talked to before on the podcast. And really, it's great to be here. Mona, you welcome back. I know you've been traveling. Tell us what you've been up to.
Welcome to New York, Mark. You've been here before, of course.
I have. I have relatives that actually they live here in New York, and they're actually moving to Georgia. I think the last one flew to Georgia the day I was flying up to here. They live in Long Island. They're retiring. They're moving to a lake in Georgia. Long story, but it was just kind of funny that my wife's saying, "Oh, you're running away from your in-laws," because the moment they fly down to Georgia, I fly up to New York. Also, it coincides with the same day that Trump was coming to Atlanta. I was flying out, but that's a different story we don't need to get into altogether. So thank you. New York City is great.
Well, it is a happening place, as you saw as well yesterday. And yes, unfortunately, we didn't have an episode last 2 weeks, but that was because I've been away for the last 2.5 weeks. Quite a world tour in 2 weeks. I was in China, and from China I went to Dubai, and from Dubai then to Moscow, and then from Moscow to London, and then back to New York.
Wow, that is quite the trip. And as you always say with EB5, you got to start with China first. And you were in China, but you didn't ignore the rest of the world, hitting Dubai, Moscow, London, which you're originally from the UK.
That's right, yes. But they had specific meetings when I was in London.
Right, but
it was business, not pleasure. Although I did get to see the Queen on her 90th birthday.
Oh,
from the balcony.
Wow. Okay. Mona's in town for my 90th. It's never over. That's great. And again, it's glad to have you back. I know we've got a lot more podcast episodes planned. I'm not here in New York for some random reason. There was this this event, the EB5 Investments Unique Opportunities and Challenges. It was a great event. You want to tell us a little bit about it? We were both there, but I want you to go.
Well, it was actually done in conjunction with Baruch College, with actually the Stephen Newman School, which is the real estate school at Baruch College. And Baruch is known for its business school, but it's actually a city university. And as a city university, it doesn't get, the fees are not as high as the private universities. So it always lacks in funding. I think all of the state and city universities have this issue. I suppose everybody always needs funding. So the purpose of the event was to raise funds for a scholarship and for research at the school. And I'm very grateful to all the sponsors. The big real estate moguls of New York City contributed. And even the smaller people and the smaller firms, and everybody had played a part. So thank you to everyone on this. But from this also, and we had an amazing lineup, we have some wonderful material, Mark, stuff that you have said that you were very impressed with hearing.
Definitely. And we're going to be covering some of that in later episode. Right now is just the day after, and I'm glad to sit down with you and quickly record an episode and talk about what our impressions were. For the person listening right now, don't think you've completely missed out, because we're going to have a wrap up for you across probably a couple episodes, because there were six panels, and each panel had lots of great experts and advice.
Well, we try to have a unique perspective from each panel, and then we try to choose our panelists very carefully.
There was a unique mix, and I really love that. It wasn't all one flavor on one panel. Where the topic was, you had people on both sides of either working with developers or working with investors. You had people with tons of experience. You had people that were fresh to the EB5 industry that brought their own unique, fresh perspective,
yes,
which was interesting. interesting to hear from these institutional type investors with 20 projects or so, and then somebody who's starting their first project.
Exactly.
Yeah, the first one.
Well, there were a number of developers in the audience. We had a very good mix in the audience. We had people from the college. We had students. We had investors themselves. We had a number of investors who actually had flown out just for this program. We had a number of developers. And, of course, we had a lot of immigration attorneys. So and interested parties, people who were part of EB5 projects but were not developers and were not attorneys and just wanted to understand what their project was doing. So it was difficult in one respect because we were talking to the advanced as well as to the beginner, but I hope we got a happy medium and we tried to give different perspectives as well to the audience.
Right. There were also, obviously, yourself and a lot of your other attorneys here at Mona Shaw and Associates were there moderating the panels. There were other experienced immigration attorneys there. And was speaking with people in the audience, there were new immigration attorneys that were thinking about EB5 attending this event because it was a quick way to understand, you know, what are the different aspects of EB5. So you had investors, developers, Chinese agents even.
Yes, you had a number of Chinese agents there.
and certainly that's probably going to be a show on its own there. As well as there was even a little political aspect to it. You had the former governor of New York. You've got somebody else who may have political aspirations or not, but
yes,
certainly
speak
like
they do. Yes, I think he wants to run for mayor.
He does? Okay.
You heard that.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't want to spoil it, you know, who exactly it was, but you'll probably be hearing it on a later episode. But again, it was very nice to hear that and Peter with IIUSA,
yes,
hearing as far as like advocacy on the Hill and then people that work on the Hill.
Well, Nick Mastroianni was also then. He's a vice president of EB5 Coalition, which is another advocacy body, as well as being president of U.S. Immigration Fund. So we had a lot of, what was happening today. And a lot of people did say that a lot of the topics were timely. They were the things that were in the news today. So I know everybody's interested. I only hope it doesn't get too dated. So like 2 years from now, if somebody's listening, they were going, is that what they were talking about back in 2016?
Well, it's interesting because you started off with what's the future of EB5 and what can we expect? And I think 2 years ago, before the first retrogression hit, it was a different feel because it was like, yeah, go, 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 get as many as you can. And now with the retrogression affecting mainland China, that's an issue that people have to think about.
Well, it'll all be moot if they do come up with a way this year of expanding the visas, mm-hmm, even without having Congress give more visas, just using the visa count that we have. I mean, there are 10,000 visas, but perhaps only 2,000 investors because those 10,000 visas encompass all the dependents.
Right, the wife
so
and kids,
if
right.
That's right. So if they take out those from the mix, then we're fine. All the numbers are back to normal and all of these topics are out of the window. But, somebody has to move on it.
Right, which makes sense if I'm on the Hill working and I'm thinking, all right, EB-5, what's the purpose of this? It's to create American jobs and an investor creates an American job, not so much the wife and children. It makes sense to say, all right, you know, the 10,000 spots for EB-5, let's make that for investors and then the dependents and, you know, wife and children could have another
that's
visa.
Just,
that makes sense.
That's just one idea which was thrown out. There are other ideas. There are a number of other categories where there are unused and wasted visas. So if those can be reshuffled. All of this can be done internally and we really don't need Congress to give any more visas out. And I think there was a bunch of other things which came up yesterday which put things into perspective. EB-5 has brought in $16 billion and that's non-taxpayers, not a single contribution from the taxpayer. All of that money's gone towards businesses and creating jobs. So that in itself is huge. EB-5 visas constitute 1% of the entire amount of visas which come into the United States. All of this noise for 1%.
1% of all visas.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
That's right. So when you take everything in perspective, conference like this, especially with the talent that we had there yesterday and the variety and the experience which was there, you really got a broad understanding. For example, right on the first panel, we had Ira. And Ira is my big mentor. I think he is the best thing since sliced bread as far as immigration is concerned. He knows anything and everything. But his perspective on where EB-5 was going was more on integrity, more on securities, more on SEC coming in outside of USCIS, which is great not only for projects, serious projects, but also for investors because it gives investor confidence.
Right. Yeah, Ira does a lot of EB-5 litigation, and he, to his own words, he handles about 95% of the problems within the EB-5 industry. I did get a chance to sit down and talk with Ira briefly after that panel, and we'll cover that in a later episode. But great. Yeah, it was great to have Mr. Kurzban on the panel there and giving his insight as well. And you mentioned, you know, EB-5 bringing in $15, $16 billion over the last decade. One statistic I heard was about $250 million in the last quarter. Yeah, maybe yes. I'm getting my quarters confused, but it sounded pretty round, so I'm just going to throw it out on the podcast. But the point was, it's not slowing down. In fact, it's quickly ramping quickly ramping up, and now we've hit caps and the retrogression for mainland China. Another point that that was brought up that honestly was a revelation to me, although I've been working with EB-5 for a number of years, is, you know, it's not just the investment, because then their taxable income,
worldwide income, every single person who gets their green card usually comes in and buys an apartment, and then if you just look at the flow of that, so you buy an apartment, you're paying for all of that, or buy a house. Mm-hmm. And then you're buying furniture, and then you're living,
and entertainment,
and then you're creating a business to pay for all of this.
Exactly. So it's much more than just that $15, $16 billion that they're investing into a business, an enterprise, a fund that creates jobs. It's all the economic activity family bring to them. Of course, a lot of them, a lot of EB-5 investors come here so their kids can go to an American school, which obviously there's some costs associated with that, and then their children, become well-educated.
Well, that was the idea of having it at Baruch College, so that the city universities got a little exposure. Because right now, the private schools get all the exposure, but the cities don't.
Right.
And then the other thing that you perhaps noticed was the mix of people, which just showed the diversity of EB-5. It's not an immigration area alone by any means anymore.
There's the immigration piece, but there's also the investment piece, which brings its own complexity. And I know you have Omar here, an SEC attorney, which you
corporate need. Corporate attorneys.
Exactly.
Due diligence attorneys. Then you have all the banking people who are there.
Lots
because
of banking.
Banking is huge now.
Right.
Escrow is huge. And all of those. And then there were other spin-offs. There were people who were marketing a website, graphic designers for, advertising, and then marketing generally. So it's opened up so many doors.
Yeah, Mona, so let's go ahead and get into the panel discussions a little briefly. We're going to deep dive in later episodes because we actually have recordings and sound bites and those sorts of things. But since you moderated a couple of the panels, so let me just ask you. The first panel, the future of EB-5 and what we can expect. Now, you moderated that and you had quite the panel. So could you tell us a little bit about who was on and really what the synopsis of that one particular panel was?
Yes. So much has happened in the last year with EB-5, Mark, as you know, and so much moving forward is happening. And at this point, really, everybody's all confused. They don't know, is there going to be a change this September? Is there not? Everybody knows it's an election year. Of course, we made light of that. And so we had to have somebody like Peter Joseph on from IIUSA, because he's somebody who's up on the Hill all the time. He knows what's going on and where the movement is and stuff. And generally, what came out of all the panel was the fact that there is this uncertainty, but there is a certainty there is going to be a change. The issue is when it's going to happen, I suppose. But it was a great panel. We had the former governor of New York, David Paterson.
Yeah, David was great.
He was. And David was instrumental for the first EB-5 regional center in New York City, because he was the governor at the time when they were doing it. And that was the big crisis in New York, when construction loans were just not available. And they were half finished, half completed hotels all around New York City. So it was one time when they so needed EB-5. And he's seen EB-5 develop. He's seen how it's been played with small players and large players. And we had that on throughout the whole day. Because, of course, it was New York City. We did have the New York flavor.
Of course.
But we tried not to focus, as you notice later, on the larger developers. And we brought in some of the smaller, newer developers too. But also on that panel, there was Nima.
Out in LA, yeah.
Nima, somebody who's very active in the field. He's out there. He's also someone who travels a lot. So he knows and he sees the differences in investor interest coming in. And of course, we had Ira Kuzban, who really did bring out, as I just mentioned, the fact that SEC is taking a very independent stance to USCIS and really trying to bring some integrity to the program, making sure that the developers are scared, as well as the immigration attorneys and all the players.
Right. And that was a lot of heavy hitters. And that was just the first panel. And I know you moderated another panel on how effective is EB-5 as alternative financing.
Here we focus a lot on the larger real estate developers in New York City. But at the same time, because in this panel we had Nick Mastriani, who is the president and CEO of U.S. Immigration Fund. And U.S. Immigration Fund have done some mega stuff in New York City, some of the big projects, and very successfully as well. But we also had representative from Silverstein, who just completed the Four Seasons, and who were looking for financing for Tower 2 of the World Trade Center. And we also had a smaller regional center, or rather a regional center which deals with smaller projects, Mike Schofield from EB-5 Affiliate Network. But at the same time, we brought out the fact that they have 15 regional centers all over the country. So this panel really was a heavy hitter panel. And to balance that, we also had representatives from alternative EB-5 programs, something which was not real estate related, transportation related. And we had Matt Dowse from Wendell's Marks, and we had the governor again to talk about that, how there are non-EB-5 projects very successfully out there.
And there were a lot of good ideas from there. I remember Matt Dowse mentioned only if there was like an EB-5 Shark Tank idea, people were kind of, you know, pitching ideas. And we all kind of chuckled at that. Sometimes there needs to be a paradigm shift. And what a lot of people were saying here is like, oh, well, the time to get into EB-5 was 5 years ago.
Right.
And somebody mentioned...
Well, Aaron did mention that that's what we were all saying back in 2010 and 11.
Exactly. You should have been here 5 years
and
now.
Yeah, so. Yes, of course. And then obviously to balance that, in another panel, we had the smaller developers, the newer developers, as well as people who had experience but were experienced with smaller projects. So we really did try to give a blend of the different type of developers and projects, all successful, I have to add.
Right. So let's fast forward to the third panel that you moderated, and that's the real world experiences in raising EB-5 capital and what the developer's perspective was. That was a very interesting panel because you had four people on, two very experienced regional center developers, as well as two new people who were starting their first regional center and their first development. That was pretty interesting to hear the, some of the ideas of working with second tier Chinese agents and some of the challenges of starting your first fund where you haven't developed that trust relationship. What were your takeaways on that third panel that you moderated?
Right. Well, we did think very carefully before we actually added the speakers on that one. And the element that they all had together was that it was a smaller raise. We're not talking about like the Silverstein Tower 2 type raise. So it was a smaller raise, and two of them had been very successful and getting multiple projects, but we wanted to know how it was for their first one. How did they start? And then we had two people who were doing their first raise, and how are they getting in? This was particularly interesting to the developers who were in the audience, as well as people listening in say, well, really, how do I, if I'm even thinking about EB-5, how would I move forward? But the interesting thing as well is that all of these developers were experienced developers. Nobody was new at developing. They all had multiple projects.
Exactly.
They were new at EB-5.
And that's the point. And I remember Amir is like, I jumped into this because I really wanted to learn what's it take to set up a regional center, but he was not a new developer. So
no,
he already had that
sure.
skill set.
Right.
And he knew how to create a real estate project. He was just new to EB-5. So
right.
I think that was a...
And then the other interesting thing was the fact that they did not want to pay the high fees to the first tier Chinese agents. And because they felt that if especially one of the developers, who John Lam, mm-hmm. who's very successfully done 5 or 6 projects now, and he basically pointed out that if I'm paying this much to Chinese agents, I don't have anything left over to pay my investors. So that was a very good point which was brought up. And
right.
this point was actually brought up in the previous panel too with the big developers. But they balance it because their developers, their projects are so large, mm-hmm. they are able to afford to pay the big first tier agents. So there is a clear division of the type of projects which are out there in China and in the world right now.
Thank you so much, Mona. Well, next I want to bring up Hui Zhen, who's been on the show before. In fact, you moderated the Chinese episode. I appreciate that because my Mandarin is non-existent. But not only did you moderate that podcast, but you also moderated one of the panels at this event. And that was China and the Rest of the World, What Do Brokers, Investors, and Agents Care About? And I know you had a couple of Chinese, or actually three Chinese agents on that panel. Tell us a little bit about that panel, the people that participated, and what you thought the major takeaway was.
Right. So we actually, this time, we invited three agents from China, Chairman He from Guangdong Immigration Association at JAG, from Dalian, and Julia from Beijing. So when we invited agents, we kind of think, because agents in China, they are divided between North and South. So this time we invited agents from North and South together, so we could see the difference. Because in our panel, we discussed, first the question I ask is the reasons why people would like to immigrate to the United States.
And it was different North to South. Yeah.
Right, it's different because as you know, South, Beijing is a little like a political center. So the reason why the immigrant is different, like Julia gave us a good point. She said because she, her client is in Beijing, the air pollution there is very, very bad. So the main reason people want to immigrate is because U.S. have a cleaner air. Mm-hmm. And also for Chairman He, he is from south of China. So as you know, Guangdong is the most developed, one of the most developed cities in China. So there are a lot of business women and or businessmen there. So he said why people want to immigrate to the United States is because they want to do business in the United States. But if you want to do business in the United States, if you only have a B visa, then that will be a problem because you can only be here for 6 months. So he said the primary reason is because people want to do business in the United States, so they want a green card. And Jack, he's from Dalian. His background is different. He has an educational consulting company, so he has many student clients. So the reason he gave me is because many students, they want to find a job in the United States. And as you know, H-1B work visa is now difficult to get. So why people want to immigrate to the United States is because they want to get a green card so they don't need to worry about the work visa problem.
You also covered about currency restrictions. I know one of the fears of working with Chinese investors is what the currency restrictions could be. Mm. And it really became pretty simple. It sounded like the Chinese government isn't going to stop somebody from migrating to the U.S. It just pay taxes. Mm. Is that what you got out of it?
I kind of have a different understanding of a currency restriction because Chairman He say if you pay taxes, then you will not subject to currency restriction. But based on my practice, I think even people who pay tax, they're still subject to currency restriction. So,
well, that's good to know because that's from the word of a Chinese agent, and now I'm talking to an immigration attorney.
Right.
So I love getting both sides of that coin.
Right.
There.
So I help many clients with their I-526 petitions. So China now, they have a law say that each person can only wire $50,000 annually, US dollar, to United States. So however, it's half a million. So each of my clients, they have to find 10 to 12 friends to help them wire the money out. But most of my clients, they already pay tax, but they're still subject to the currency restriction.
Okay. Well, thank you for clearing that up. So when we hear that, and there was a lot of great advice, it's glad to get your insight on that early. Hui, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, next we have Omar Hakim. And Omar, it's great to see you again. Last I saw you in person was at the AILA conference last year, and it's great to finally see your face again, and I'm meeting everyone else almost for the first time, you know, face-to-face. But, you know, you and I have met before. Anyway, it's not about that. I want to talk about the panel that you moderated, and that is raising EB-5 funds and the issues to keep in mind. So tell us a little bit about the panelists that were on that, and maybe one key takeaway.
All right, so we had a group of professionals experienced in compliance and securities laws, and also someone who started their own fund. And what we're really trying to get across in this panel is some people, you know, just go out and start raising funds. They don't really think about, you know, ways they might be getting themselves in trouble or issues that might crop up later. So we wanted to go ahead and lay out up front, because there was a lot of developers attending who are just now getting into EB-5, and we wanted to use best practices from the start. So we talked about a wide range of issues, One major issue that came up and we had a lively discussion about was accepting children under the age of 18.
Right.
Because with retrogression, we're seeing more and more people want to do it because if they just come in under their parents like as they used to, then they're going to age out. But then there's a contract law issue.
Right. And that was a key thing because they're going to age out because the EB-5 process right now is pretty long. And people age. And children seem to age, you know, even faster. But those that were, you know, like 17, the issue, you know, was thought of like, are they going to age out? And I love the discussions you have of, you know, what is a binding contract? Because the money has to be at risk. Right. But is it really at risk if a child is signing a contract, but they're not going to be liable for that contract? And some of the creative strategies that your panel talked about, how to get around that. So can you touch upon that?
Yeah, the bottom line is that at age 18, the child is going to have the option by law in most states to either opt out or reaffirm the contract. And we talked about all kinds of ways where we, you know, get the parent to sign, to get the parent to guarantee that they'll maintain the investment if the child backs out. So we did all the possible ways under the law to make the contract as binding as possible. But at the end of the day, if USCIS wants to get really technical, then they could say that the small technical understanding of the funds not being at risk. So the bottom line is any investor now needs to be aware that there is some risk in accepting a minor investor. So, and also projects needs to be aware of that too, because they might be relying on the funds and then only have to repay it later.
Omar, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, next we have Rebecca Singh. And Rebecca, it's great to finally meet you in person.
It's great meeting you as well.
Now you can put bald head to the voice. And you moderated a panel as well, Unique Issues in EB-5. It was a great panel because it was very eclectic, the people that you had on there. And the topics that you covered were pretty in-depth. And yeah, anyway, I don't want to take too much away from it. So tell us a little bit about the panelists that you had and perhaps your takeaways on either what individual panelists said, some of the issues that were discussed on this panel.
Yeah, it was a very jam-packed panel. As we said, it's because we covered so many different topics with the unique issues in EB-5. The panel is very diverse. We had immigration attorneys such as Jinhee from Wild & Associates. We had Crystal from Miller Mayer. And we also had Matthew from Greenberg Traurig. And it was great because they were able to discuss the issues regarding retrogression. Matt was also great because he discussed all the policy issues and what could be done with moving forward, such as mainly that the fact that we need more visas in the program.
Which seemed to be a common theme throughout the whole thing.
Oh,
everyone's like, more visas.
Yes, I think that was everyone's wish.
Right.
Jinhee was also great in discussing the age-out issues. And Crystal discussed what was going on with the Department of State with the visa bulletin, and that we saw that the visa bulletin from June didn't make any move in July's bulletin. So it's this, the date is still stuck at February 15th of 2014. Going on, we had Jeff Carr. He's an economist. He talked about TEA. What was great, he started out with the basics of TEA and then delved into all the little issues that are, I don't want to say plaguing EB-5, but, you know, there's some controversy with the TEA. Mm-hmm. I thought he did a great job with that. I think he could have probably went on for hours discussing TEA.
He probably could have. And a lot of the topics he talked about at the panel, we've actually covered on the show with Jeff before.
Yes. Yeah. And then we had Julia Park. She was representing her regional center. And it was great because she pretty much hit all the topics. She had some ideas on regional center projects versus pool direct versus entrepreneur projects. So there are different types of projects out there. And last but not least, we had Reed Thomas from NES Financial, and it was great hearing from him discussing escrow.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for that synopsis on your panel, Unique Issues in EB-5.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I wish it was a lot of information. So hopefully we'll have more podcasts out there discussing all the other unique issues in EB-5.
Certainly. And we'll go deeper into this in later episodes. And thanks so much.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. I hope you enjoyed this episode as an overview of the EB-5 Investments and Unique Opportunities Conference held at and benefiting Baruch College in New York City. I certainly enjoyed getting the impressions from the attorney panelists themselves. We are going to dive deeper into some of the sessions in later episodes. Make sure you don't miss it by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.